strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show, KTAR News, 92.3 FM, and the KTAR News app.
Hey, thanks so much for being here. Appreciate you spending some time with the show. COVID-19 still on the front of everyone's mind. What's going on? This last spike, we're seeing drops in cases. We know that things are trending down as far as hospitalizations go. But what direction should we be taking, especially after the death of Colin Powell? It's been so publicized that he was suffering from myeloma, from a disorder that really reduces your affects your immune system. But he was fully vaccinated, so that's brought that to attention again. Joining us right now is Don Harrington, the interim director of the Arizona Department of Health Services. Let me start with the idea of mandates. Where do you stand on mandates? What's the official position of the Department of Health Services on mandates?
Well, we don't deal with mandates, Mike. What we do is we deal with recommendations on public health matters. So we do recommend mitigation strategies that we think will be effective, but we don't do mandates.
When you look at what's happened here in Arizona and the way things are trending, do you feel that we're trending in the right direction? Have we gone as high as we're going to go with this latest spike? Are we trending down?
Yes, I'm hoping so. You know, this is a very ever-changing and fluid situation that we're dealing with. And as a virus has the potential to always mutate and change its form, that could always throw us a curveball. But as it is right now, because of people getting vaccinated, which is our number one strategy in getting the disease under control, as more people get vaccinated and as more age groups, like the 5 to 11 age group that's coming up here shortly, get vaccinated, that's going to help us even further contain the disease.
When you look at this trend, what do you attribute it to? The first two big spikes we had here in Arizona were very steep climbs and then very steep drops. This was not as steep of a climb. This looks more like an inverted U as opposed to the other ones that look like an inverted V. What's the cause of that? Any idea?
Well, I mean, it would be all conjecture on my part, but I think largely it was the fact that folks were keeping social distancing, were wearing masks when they were in groups, they were getting vaccinated as best they could. So I think those types of things really played into it as time's gone along and people have gotten a little more open about being out in public together and in group settings and not wearing masks. I think it does create a little more of the disease spread, but it doesn't create the great decline like what you saw in the previous surges.
When we talk about how best to eliminate, or not, I don't think we're going to eliminate, but to defeat this spike or these spikes in this virus, one of the things that's thrown about so much is we talk about the vaccine, but what about the people that have had the virus that have built up antibodies because they've recovered from the virus? Why isn't that talked about more, and shouldn't that be a part of the data when we're looking at how close to herd immunity we are?
Well, and that's a very good point. But I think one of the things that the early studies are showing is that immunity from having the disease may only last about 3 months. So from the perspective of a longer lasting strategy, the vaccine is a far better strategy than having the immunity from the disease.
See, and what we've been hearing, and that's where the mixed messages come in, mixed messages is the right word, is we've heard that the built-up antibodies from having the virus was better than getting it from the vaccine. At least I've heard that from a number of cases. But you're saying that those antibodies don't last as long as the vaccinations do?
That's what the early studies are showing. They're giving us about a 3 month window for that immunity to hold steady, and beyond that, it begins to wane. And of course, the vaccine. Now, we're recommending for people that are 6 months out from their second dose or from their original dose, if it's J&J, to get their vaccine. And I think that's being extra protective on our part with the 6 month. We think it probably goes a little bit beyond that. Not sure just how far, but the studies do show only 3 months for the immunity that someone gets from having the disease.
And when that 6 month window closes, and let's say someone does, I've had the Pfizer vaccine. I've had both doses of the Pfizer vaccine. If I were to go and get the, and that was about 6 months ago, if I go and get a booster, do I have to get another booster in another 6 months, or is that three doses enough to carry me even longer?
I think they're still thinking about that, to be honest with you. I haven't seen anything definitive on how long they think it will last. I think in the end, what they're hoping is that it will become much like a flu shot if it continues on in our normal lives that we have COVID with us. And that would be like a once a year kind of immunization. But I think right now the jury's still out just on how long it will last and how much more immunity beyond 6 months a booster might provide.
Don Harrington joins us. He's the interim director of the Arizona Department of Health Services. What do you attribute younger people not getting, the people that are unvaccinated, the younger people that are still kind of leery about getting it? What do you attribute that to? And how do we get those people to get the vaccine?
Oh, that is such a great question. I wish I knew all the answers to that, because we do have a large group of 18 to 40-year-olds that are not vaccinated, and they're probably our most unvaccinated group, aside from maybe the 12 to 18, which just recently got the ability to get the vaccine. I wish I could find out what was causing it exactly. I think there's a certain part of the being young and healthy, you don't think things are going to affect you as much. That has to be part of it. But one of the considerations with that 18 to 40 group is that they're the folks that generally will have the kids that are unable to be vaccinated, like the 0 to 5 range. We're hoping, you know, to get the approval here in November for the 5 to 11. But assuming it is approved like we think it will be, the people in the 18 to 40 group have the children that are 0 to 5 that are not able to be vaccinated. So I think one of the things that should be a consideration for those folks is the fact that they might be able to pass that disease along to their young child who isn't able to be vaccinated.
But isn't it the youngest among us that are the least likely to be seriously ill or die? When I look at the numbers, and I look at them every single day, I'm sure like you do, it still seems that even though the biggest demographic that has been vaccinated are older Americans, older people, they're also the ones that are still the highest levels of serious illness and death.
You're correct. The thing we don't know and really throws a wrench into everything is how many of the people out there are asymptomatic and don't even know they have it. And where that comes into play particularly, as you mentioned about the older generations that are, you know, they are higher vaccinated in proportion, is the fact that, say, let's say the young child goes to see grandma and grandma's not vaccinated, and that child's asymptomatic but could be a carrier for the disease. That's why we've got to try to keep it out of the children as well. And that 18 to 40 group is particularly a strong group to work with to try to prevent that from getting into those age children.
And see, that's so let me be devil's advocate with you. Let's say I wish I was in that demographic of 18 to 40. I'm long past it. But if I'm in that demographic and I say to you, here's the deal. If I get this virus, there is over a 99% chance that I'm going to survive. I will have the antibodies. I'm not going to get seriously ill. And I'm concerned about some of the side effects that have been reported with some of the things in this vaccine. So I'm not going to get it. What do you say to that person?
Well, I've had both doses and a booster, and I had slight side effects. I had a little achy legs and that kind of thing, nothing severe. But I think that the side effects that we're seeing are far outweighed by the benefit of the vaccine. And from that perspective, it is just such an important thing, that vaccine. As with all vaccines, we see there's a thing called the VAERS report, and that's a report that reports adverse reactions that the federal government keeps track of. Now, a lot of people look at that VAERS report on the surface and don't understand beyond the surface what it means, and a lot of those are just self-reports. Almost all of them are. And so from that perspective, when somebody calls in and said, I have a headache, because which is a symptom also of the vaccine, they can report that, and that will show up as an adverse reaction in their report. So I think people have to be really cautious at how they approach looking at any kind of adverse reaction reporting system.
Well, Mr. Harrington, I appreciate the time, and I hope you'll come back. We always love this information, and I know the audience needs to hear it. So thanks for coming on.
All right. You're welcome.
All right. That is Don Harrington, interim director of the Arizona Department of Health Services. Going to keep the information coming on this so that people can make an educated decision. Coming up in a moment, we're going to talk about rising prices. It continues. When will it end? What's your best guess? We'll talk about that in a moment.
strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show, KTAR News, 92.3 FM, and the KTAR News app.
Hey, thanks for being here. Appreciate you spending some time with the Mike Broomhead Show. If you've not subscribed to the Mike Broomhead Show podcast, do it right now. It's very simple to do on any device that you have. You'll never miss a minute of the show again. It's the Mike Broomhead Show podcast brought to you this week by Retirement Planners of America. Wanted you to hear a couple of things going on with the supply chain issue. Let's start with the gas prices. Let's go there before we go supply chain. This is an ABC report about gas prices in the U.S.
In California now, the average price for regular unleaded is $4.34 a gallon, according to new numbers out from the Energy Department. But in many areas of California, it's hard to find it for under $5 a gallon for regular unleaded. New data shows the average price nationwide for regular unleaded is $3.32 a gallon, up 6 cents in just the past week, up $1.17 compared to this time last year. Analysts say it's linked to the price of oil, which is now at a 7-year high.
So we now are seeing oil prices increase. This is, and I've talked about this every single day, this is the policy issue I'm talking about. And I'm not going to complain. I'm making an observation. You decide whether it's a complaint for you or it is just the cost of what we must do. The Vice President of the United States was at Lake Mead showing how the water levels have fallen, blaming it on man-made climate change, and saying that we desperately need to do something. The policies of this administration have dramatically affected the price of oil. And anyone who denies that by saying, well, OPEC, we asked OPEC, we did. We asked OPEC to increase production so that it would drive down the price of oil. And OPEC said, no, we're not doing it. They like oil expensive. You think about what it costs to pull a barrel of oil out of the ground anywhere in the world. There is an expense tied to pulling out of the ground. There's an expense tied to refining it. There's an expense tied to shipping it. And if you can drive the price of that oil up, your profit margin goes up. There are many times, if you go back to when Sarah Palin became the nominee for vice president, when John McCain ran for president, what made her famous in the minds of people politically in Alaska was here she was, this governor from a small town in Alaska, and she was mayor, then she became governor. One of the things she did was she fought the oil companies because she said, you know, the oil in Alaska belongs to the Alaskan people, and the Alaskan people get checks every year. The citizens of Alaska get checks every year based on the resources in that state. The state actually writes the people checks. Well, the oil leases were given to ExxonMobil and these other major corporations, but they weren't pulling the oil out of the ground. They understood that it's going to be worth more in years, so we'll pull it out of the ground when it's worth more. And the governor of Alaska said, you're either going to pump the oil and pay the people of Alaska, or we're going to give these leases to somebody that will pump the oil out of the ground. So that was what kind of made her famous in the eyes of some, saying that she went up against the big oil companies and said, it's our oil. We're leasing the rights to you. We'll lease it to people that pull the oil out of the ground. You either get to work or we're going to give it to someone else. So what we've done now in America is we've changed our policy from oil independence, where we're not fracking. We haven't given out oil leases like we did before. We've dramatically decreased our ability to pump oil. So when we ask the OPEC nations to increase their production and they say no, we're beholden to enemies of America. And in many cases, these countries are enemies of us. And instead of us being energy independent and being able to pump as much oil as America needs, and then that's why we saw dramatically lower prices, yes, demand has gone up as the economy has opened. Of course it is. But we've always been able to keep up with this. We have always been able to keep up. If you look during the Trump administration and the policies of energy independence that we had, building the pipeline, fracking, pulling the oil out of the ground, natural gas as well, when we saw all of these things happening, the price of a gallon of gasoline was very low. When we had unemployment rates that rival the unemployment rates we have right now. So it is directly tied to the policies of this administration. So every single working class American out there, if you live in California, if you're looking at the gas prices at $5 a gallon, I paid over $3.50 a gallon the other day. That's directly tied to some of the policies of this administration. I want you to hear one more. This is also ABC. This is talking about the backlog in shipping.
The waiting line of cargo ships off the California coast is getting longer. A record 100 ships are waiting to enter the ports of Long Beach and Los Angeles. For comparison, an average of only 17 would typically be waiting. And 45 more ships are due to arrive by Thursday. adding to the supply chain backlog that's leading to empty store shelves across the country and higher prices everywhere. The CEO of one toy making company says the cost of shipping supplies like cardboard and plastic have recently increased by 300%. He expects some toy prices to double by next year. The Biden administration has taken steps to alleviate the logjam, announcing that the Port of Los Angeles will operate 24/7. But a trade group representing clothing manufacturers is demanding more action, suggesting, quote, the use of the National Guard or using naval ports to help unload cargo.
Yeah, and why aren't we looking at ways to do that, to ease this issue? Again, a day late and a dollar short, and it's costing the American people. Coming up in a moment, the Supreme Court have taken on two very important cases that we all have to talk about. One is the Second Amendment issue. The other is Roe versus Wade. All that's coming up next.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
Hey, thanks for being here. Appreciate you spending some time with the Mike Broomhead Show. Want to invite you to join me Saturday, November 6th at the Red and Blue at the Zoo, Police and Fire Appreciation Day. We are doing this in partnership with the Wildlife World Zoo in the West Valley. It's the second time we've done this. We did it last time with law enforcement. This time it's law enforcement and fire. If you are a firefighter or if you're a law enforcement, just bring your identification that shows you're in that profession. You and three guests will have free admission to the zoo that day. It is such a fun place, and the weather is perfect. I love the zoo. It is so interactive. It is terrific. They have got so many things for you to see there. I hope you'll join us. It's free. It's just our way to say thank you. Go to the contest page at KTAR.com for full details, and I hope to see you there on November 6th. The headline says locked and loaded. Supreme Court is ready for a showdown on the Second Amendment. This is a case out of New York from the New York State Rifle and Pistol Association about concealed carry permits. You have to show cause in New York as to what they say is you have to give them a good reason why you want to carry a concealed weapon in New York. And they're saying that that's not a good law, that it infringes on people's Second Amendment rights. So the Supreme Court is going to hear this. All we have heard for the last year plus is follow the science. Follow the science. Well, if you look at the science when it comes to gun ownership, and I have owned firearms most of my adult life, you will see that in states like Arizona, where we have, I think, the least stringent gun laws in the nation, where would you rather live? In the worst parts of Phoenix or the worst parts of Chicago or the worst parts of D.C.? What's funny is in Chicago, they blame their gun violence on the ability to get guns easier in other places that bring them into Chicago. It's so funny. It's like saying the drug problem in Chicago is caused by, you know, the ability to bring drugs across the border. No, it's the people that are addicted to the drugs, and it's the people that would do violence with guns. So what we did in Arizona years ago was we changed our law. I have a concealed carry permit, and I got the concealed carry permit because it shows proficiency and there's reciprocity with other states. So when you travel, you can carry concealed in the states that have reciprocity with Arizona and that concealed carry permit. But I also got my permit before you didn't have to have one. In Arizona, now the law has been changed. If you legally own a handgun, you can conceal it on your person or otherwise. You're allowed to. And there were a lot of people that freaked out when that law changed. There's no training and there's no all these other things. And it was made clear to me, and I thought this was the most interesting argument, which is, you know, criminals have no training and most criminals don't practice, you know, proficiency, and they carry concealed firearms all the time because if they're not supposed to own guns, they aren't supposed to conceal guns, and they don't care. And if you look at our death rates, we rival, you know, we are better than a lot of other very high crime cities in America. The Valley here, I would think most of us think the Valley is a relatively safe place to be. And one of the reasons why we don't have a whole lot of carjackings and otherwise is carjackers understand that when you're in Arizona, there's a very good chance that we're going to fight fire with fire. Now, I'm not looking for a gunfight in the streets. I'm certainly not advocating for that. But our ability to protect ourselves in Arizona make us safer. An armed society is a polite society. That's what the science says. So the Supreme Court's going to take up this case. I'm interested to hear how they decide and what their decision is. And, you know, the Second Amendment is very clear about your right to keep and bear arms. When they talk about a well-armed militia, they do everything they can to massage that amendment to not mean what it, you know, what do you mean a militia and it's different now and we had no idea that we'd have the firepower we had. Well, no one argues the First Amendment. I guess we are. We are arguing the First Amendment where, you know, just like the Founding Fathers never dreamed we'd have a weapon at our disposal like an AR-15. A semi-automatic weapon when all they had back then were muskets. They also didn't understand we'd have the internet and Twitter, and yet the First Amendment is protected. So we argue about this stuff, but there's a reason, there's a brilliance in these amendments that protect our rights. Another case they're taking up is the abortion law in Texas. And I don't want to wade too much into this topic because it's such a sensitive topic, other than to say this. If I were the person that was charged with making an argument about being pro-life, I would change the way we argue about it because I am unapologetically pro-life. But my mother is my hero. I've talked about her very often and the hard work. She taught me work ethic. I've got two girls of my own. I certainly am not someone that ever believes I can tell a woman what to do with her body. As far as I'm concerned, we shouldn't. I mean, tattoo it, pierce it, cut it off. What do I care what you do with your body? It's your body. But if we as pro-life people truly believe you are carrying another life inside of you, that's different in protecting a human life. I'm not asking pro-choice people to agree with me. I'm trying to find at least common ground of respect of opinion that I am not some Neanderthal, keep them barefoot and pregnant. That's never been my attitude toward women ever in my life. But I do believe that it's a human being inside. And the argument about abortion has always been about life. When does life begin? Hillary Clinton coined the phrase that abortion should be safe, legal, and rare. And I argued back then, and other people have followed suit with the argument, that if it's just a simple medical procedure on a glob of cells, why does it need to remain rare? Well, the reason why it needs to remain rare in the minds of people is the guilty conscience that comes with it, that on some level, they understand they are ending a life or the potential of a life. And so that argument about abortion, late-term abortion, how late can you have an abortion, is about life. When do we as a society believe life begins? So this heartbeat law, when you can detect a heartbeat, is it alive? And so again, we're arguing about when life begins. So there is no doubt that what you are doing in an abortion is ending a life. So that's what we've been arguing about. We should at least have an honest conversation about what it's about. And is it a state's rights issue? Does the state of Texas have a right to set medical rules in its state? And if California wants to keep abortions legal, if other states want to keep them even late-term abortions, if they want to do that in their state, then that's a state's rights conversation. And I'm anxious to see what the Supreme Court does with these two very, very important cases that they will be hearing. And it's interesting. I find it very, very compelling. Coming up in a moment, we are going to talk about, safe spaces. A college student is angry in Oberlin, Ohio. Wait until you hear what he's angry about. It's coming up in just a moment.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
Hey, thanks for being here. Coming up just after 10 o'clock, we are going to talk about tax cuts in Arizona and a fight that may be going to the courts here in the state of Arizona as attorneys argue over tax cuts. That's coming up because it matters. It's all here in Arizona. An Ohio college student, this is one of my favorite stories of the morning. This is how soft we have gotten and what we've done in this country to allow people to believe that they have a right to not have their feelings hurt. Now, you tell me how funny this is. A student at Oberlin College in Ohio described being scared and angry after the school announced that a work crew would be installing radiators in a safe space dormitory for women and trans students, explaining that the crew would likely be cisgender men. So they sent a crew of men cisgender men. I don't know, there are like 64 genders now, and I only know of two. I only understand two, and so I know I'm old school Neanderthal, horrible caveman type person, but that's just what how I grew up. There were two genders. I know there's like 64 now, and I have learned that I am a cisgender male. Is that right, Jeremy? You're younger than I am, so is that right? I'm cisgender, right? A cis male, right?
I'd never heard that term before in my life.
You've never heard cisgender before?
Never.
You mean I'm more progressive than you?
You are.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so apparently
I'm the fossil here.
Being cisgender, being a cis male, C-I-S, means that you are the gender that you've been assigned to. So I was born a male, and I live as a heterosexual male. That makes me cis male. We need graphs here and charts. Anyway, I was angry, scared, and confused. Why didn't the college complete the installation over the summer when the building was empty? Why couldn't they tell us precisely when the workers would be here? Why were they only notifying us the day before the installation was due to begin? Oberlin student Peter Frey Weitzer wrote in an op-ed piece published in the college newspaper. The student said he grew concerned because he had not heard of the installation plans before a school email was sent out October 7th. He explained that the crew would be likely a cisgender men entering Baldwin Cottage, where his home to a safe space for women and transgendered persons. I know, stop laughing. It's not funny. In general, I am very averse to people entering my personal space. This anxiety was compounded by the fact that the crew would be strangers, and they were more than likely to be cisgender men. The work crew eventually showed up, and Frey Weitzer described that he saw immediately that they were all men. It was, first of all, how dare you? You don't know how they identify. How dare you? It was clear that the college had not made a special request that male workers not be allowed onto the upper floors of Baldwin. He asked a representative of the college who he called Polo Man because he was wearing a neat polo, who accompanied the crew, if he would reject getting the radiator installed. The college emissary apparently said no, and the student left for class to allow the work crew to begin the dorm improvement. By the time I had come back, they appeared to be done, though Polo Man warned me that they would return later in the week to check the insulation. Sure enough, they were back the next day. I felt mildly violated and a little peeved. I don't know. Should I go on? More of this is great. He said he asked other students how they felt about the work crew, with many complaining about the messes, noise, and typical complaints accompanying construction projects. Great quote. I understand, of course, that installations like this are routine. The college needs to improve its facilities occasionally, and who am I to stand in the way of that? After all, I get a brand spanking new radiator right in time for cold weather. But why not finish the project during the 4 months of summer semester when the building was unoccupied? Oberlin's press office didn't immediately respond. I'm speechless. So we live, I want you to think about how great our life is in the U.S. We are watching the fall of Rome. We have gotten to a point where we have coddled our children to the point that he is complaining because I don't know if he's transgender, but I have no idea. But it is a dorm, a safe space for women and transgender students. So I guess men aren't allowed because that's what triggers everyone. So guys show up to do work. And he's triggered because they should have done the work when it didn't annoy him. If this isn't the most elitist attitude that there is, and I guarantee you there's laughter on the college campus, but nobody's allowed to laugh. You can't point at this person and say, what are you, crazy? You're not allowed to do that because they're protected. I don't know. I can't describe it. But I saw this story today and I thought, we're watching the fall of Rome. We have gotten to be so rich as a nation. We are so wealthy as a nation and so pampered as a nation. We are so used to our creature comforts that now we're talking about being offended. Now we're talking about having our feelings hurt. Now it's a crime. Hate speech is a crime. It's absolutely absurd. Back to real business, just after 10 o'clock. Attorneys argue over the tax cuts in Arizona. Why is this important? But most importantly, why is it important to you? That's coming up.